MSW Media.
News with swearing. Daily Beans, Daily Beans. Daily Beans, Daily Beans.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Beans for Tuesday, February 8th, 2022. Today, the National Archives has recovered 15 boxes of documents at Mar-a-Lago stolen from the White House. Over 140 Republican leaders and former officials issue a joint statement condemning the RNC's censure of Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger and its characterization of the insurrection as legitimate political discourse. There's an opinion now from Barney Frank on how Liz Cheney could force voters to defend democracy. And SCOTUS uses the shadow docket to put on hold a lower court ordering Alabama to redraw its racist maps. I'm your host, Allison Gill. Hey, everybody. It's AG. Dana's on tour. She's in New York. She's going to be doing a show on Wednesday night, tomorrow night. And Green Room 42 is where you can find those tickets if you want to live stream it or go in person. It's going to be awesome. Later in the show, I'm going to be talking with Dallas McLaughlin. He's an author and a comedian and a writer, and we're going to discuss his new album, and we're also going to talk about Joe Rogan and Spotify and why he's not putting his album on Spotify either. Now, Spotify, speaking of, their CEO put out a statement to their employees today apologizing for the controversy and the terrible language and how it offends. We know it offends so many of you, and we're going to keep him anyway. And then they say, we just want to let you know his content doesn't reflect the values of Spotify. Well, then, why did you pay $100 million for his views? It's interesting. Anyway, still happy about my decision, pulling everything from Spotify. We do have a lot of news to get to today, so let's hit the hot notes. Hot notes. All right, big story today, the National Archives and Records Administration last month retrieved 15 boxes, 1-5 documents, boxes of documents and other items, by the way, from the former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence, because the material should have been turned over to the agency when he left the White House. That's according to archives officials. Now, the recovery of the boxes from Trump's Florida resort raises new concerns about his adherence to the Presidential Records Act, which requires the preservation of memos, letters, notes, emails, faxes, and other written communications related to the president's official duties. Trump advisors deny any nefarious intent and say the boxes contain, you know, mementos, gifts, letters from world leaders, which is a presidential record, and other correspondence. Now, the items included correspondence with North Korea leader Kim Jong-un, which Trump once described as a love letter, as well as a letter left for him by President Barack Obama. And that's according to two people familiar with the contents. Archives officials confirmed the transfer, which occurred in mid-January following publication of a version of this story by the Washington Post earlier Monday. The National Archives and Records Administration said in a statement, quote, these records should have been transferred to NARA from the White House at the end of the Trump administration in January 2021, and that Trump representatives are continuing to search for additional records. Why aren't the cops? Quote, the Presidential Records Act is critical to our democracy, in which the government is held accountable by the people. That's the archivist of the United States, David Ferriero. And he also continued in his statement saying, whether through the creation of adequate and proper documentation, sound records management practices, the preservation of records, or the timely transfer of them to the National Archives at the end of an administration, there should be no question as to need for both diligence and vigilance. Records matter. So the archives and me are pissed about this. And I'm wondering if they've made referrals to the Department of Justice. Discussions between the archives and the former president's lawyers began last year and resulted in the transfer of the records last month. One person familiar with the material said Trump advisors discussed what had to be returned. Some of the people familiar with the transfer spoke on the condition of anonymity. And the archives has struggled to cope with a president who flouted document retention requirements and frequently ripped up or ate official documents, leaving hundreds of pages taped back together or some that arrived at the archives still shredded. Some damaged documents were among those turned over to the House Select Committee. And I think it's important that Trump decided to preserve some documents and destroy others, that could show consciousness of guilt. And you know what? Here's what it is. He destroyed the ones that could hurt him and he kept the ones that boost his ego, right? But I wonder how the National Archives knew that specific documents had been destroyed. My guess is that the committee has testimony from one or more people that know the documents existed. And when the committee asked the archives for them, hey, we have testimony about these documents that people have laid eyes on. The archives said they're nowhere. They're not here. Or they're in a bag of shredded documents. And I would also be interested to know if any of the documents were destroyed during the impeachment investigation of the insurrection. We know from court rulings and the Mueller investigation that an impeachment inquiry is an official proceeding. So that would meet one of the three elements of criminal obstruction, which is nexus to an official proceeding. Now, there's another federal statute, 18 U.S. Code 2071, that's not the Presidential Record Act, and it says, whoever willfully and unlawfully conceals, removes, mutilates, obliterates, or destroys, or attempts to do so, or with intent to do so, takes and carries away any record, proceeding, map, book, paper, document, or other thing, filed or deposited with any clerk or officer of any court of the United States, or in any public office, that's the president, or with any judicial or public officer of the United States, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both. Whoever, having custody of any such record, proceeding, map, book, document, paper, or other thing, willfully and unlawfully conceals, removes, mutilates, obliterates, falsifies, or destroys the same, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both, and shall forfeit his office and be disqualified from holding any office under the United States. Now, this, I don't know if this statute was born of the Presidential Records Act. It's not the Presidential Records Act, but I've read that the constitutional requirements to run for president that are outlined in the Constitution, you know, you got to be older than 35, you have to have lived here for more than a certain amount of years, you have to be a natural citizen, that those could supersede this statute because the GOP was trying to apply this to Hillary when she did her email thing. Now, I've asked legal Twitter, and Steve Laddick replied, unless if the statute specifically says and bars them from holding office, then yes, it does. It can. So interesting. But it's also never been tested, right? We've never been here before. This act was written after Nixon, right after Nixon, and because of Nixon. So it seems, well, not, I don't know if 2701 is or not. I don't know. We'll see. I think probably we'll get some more clarification as the days go on, but I just wanted to give you that little bit of an update. And 140 plus Republicans have signed the following statement. Last week, the RNC made clear that it would rather be the big lie party than the big tent party by condemning two principled elected leaders while condoning conspiracies, lies, and violent insurrection, by censuring Congresswoman Liz Cheney and Congressman Adam Kinzinger for their role in investigating the January 6th attacks. They have betrayed the GOP's founding principles and ceded control of a once great movement to grifters and extremists. The RNC has also signaled that it no longer welcomes people of conscience. The RNC's description of the January 6th insurrection as legitimate political discourse is an affront to the rule of law, peaceful self-government, and the constitutional order. There can be no justifying the horrific attack that day, and we condemn the committee for excusing the actions of men and women who battered police officers, ransacked our nation's capital, called for the hanging of Vice President Mike Pence, and sought to overturn a free and fair election. And when they say they condemn the committee, they mean the Republican National Committee, not the 1-6 committee. I continue here. History will mark the censure as a turning point for the RNC, a time of choosing between civility and patriotism on the one hand, and conspiracy and political violence on the other. We stand firmly for the first set of values. We stand proudly next to principled leaders such as Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, and we stand united against efforts to defile our democracy. Really strong statement there. Also today, the Supreme Court in a 5-4 decision allowed a congressional map drawn by Alabama Republicans to remain in place, freezing a lower court ruling that said the map likely violates the Voting Rights Act by diluting the political power of black voters. The lower court had ordered a new map to be drawn, which could have led to Democrats gaining another seat in the House this fall. Chief Justice John Roberts joined the liberal justices in dissent. That's how racist this is. The justices also said they would hear arguments over the map, adding another potentially explosive issue concerning the scope of key provisions of the Voting Rights Act. The court's order, the first dealing with the 2022 elections, means that the map will be used for the state's upcoming primary and likely be in place for the entire election cycle while the legal challenge plays out. Shadow docket. The order pauses an opinion by a panel of three judges that held that the Alabama map likely violates Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act because it only includes one district where black voters have the opportunity to elect a candidate. Justice Brett Kavanaugh, writing for himself and fellow conservative Justice Samuel Alito, said, "I like beer." No, he said the court acted in order to maintain the status quo while the justices consider the issue. Kavanaugh said the court's order does not make or signal any change to the voting rights law. But Roberts, who again found himself siding with the court's three liberals, said that while he agreed the court should take up the issue for the next term to resolve the wide-ranging uncertainties in the case, he would have allowed the district court opinion to stand while the appeals process played out. The Supreme Court will hear the full case next fall. Quote, "The district court properly applied existing law in an extensive opinion with no apparent errors for our correction." That was Roberts, siding with the liberals. Justice Kagan, writing for her liberal colleagues, Stephen Breyer and Sonia Sotomayor, wrote a much more strongly worded dissent. Kagan said the majority had gone badly wrong in granting Alabama's request to freeze the lower court opinion, and the court's decision, quote, "forces black Alabamians to suffer what under the law is clear vote dilution." And she said the decision will undermine a key section of the Voting Rights Act. She also said the court shouldn't issue such an impactful order on its emergency docket, which critics refer to as the shadow docket. Thank you, Steve Vladeck, without a full briefing and oral argument. Today's decision, she says, is one more in a disconcertingly long line of cases in which the court uses its shadow docket to signal or make changes in the law without anything approaching full briefing and argument. She said the court's action, quote, "does a disservice to black Alabamians who have had their electoral power diminished in violation of a law this court once knew to buttress all of American democracy." And Barney Frank, former congressman from Massachusetts, has written an op-ed for the Washington Post that goes like this. "Liz Cheney and the Democratic leadership have already done American democracy a major service by their mutually respectful cooperation in investigating the insurrection. Their demonstration that political leaders can jointly defend foundational principles while differing sharply on other issues is invaluable. It could also be the basis for a great opportunity for American voters, the chance to express their support for the integrity of the democratic process, regardless of their views on any other questions. This can be accomplished with a two-step process." I love how he lays this out. First, Cheney runs for re-election, not in the primary to become the official Republican nominee, but as a principled independent in the general election who retains her personal Republican allegiance. Second, Wyoming Democrats do not support a candidate to oppose her. The result would be a November contest in which all citizens of Wyoming could choose between two candidates who are aligned on a broad range of public policy issues, Republicans, but differ largely on the question of Donald Trump's assault on the electoral process. Cheney can make clear that if elected, she will not vote for a Democratic speaker or change her position on any substantive questions. This will make it possible for other Republican leaders who share her principled commitment to campaign for her, even though she's not the official nominee. There will be hundreds of contests in the country in which Democrats and Republicans will differ sharply on the question of how to protect the integrity of elections, but they will also disagree on abortion, climate change, the level and content of government spending, etc. Only in an election in which candidates largely agree on the issues will it be possible for voters to decide whether losers of a fairly conducted election should have to abide by its results or whether it's acceptable to engage in blatant lies, bizarre fantasies, vicious personal attacks on innocent people, and violence. Barney continues, "I acknowledge this calls on both Cheney and the Democrats to extend their efforts one step further. She temporarily cedes the official Republican nomination for her congressional seat to a Trump devotee. Democrats give up their right to nominate a candidate or, if someone runs anyway, the opportunity to organize on his or her behalf. Each of these sacrifices has real meaning for dedicated people who have taken their party affiliations seriously, as they should in the interest of democracy. But neither a Cheney win in the primary nor a Democratic win in November is a possibility, a realistic possibility," meaning Cheney can't win in the primary against a Trump devotee. And Democrats aren't going to win in the general in Wyoming. So don't run a Democrat. Let Cheney run independent and not primary anyone and put a Trump Republican against Cheney for Wyoming. And he goes on, "A general election between two conservatives who differ mainly on the importance of electoral integrity, on the other hand, would offer what social scientists call a natural experiment, A situation in which reality approximates what we could create in a laboratory if we could isolate a particular factor. Take the Democrat out of the running, right? I might be overly optimistic in thinking that this could produce a positive result for political sanity. Wyoming is the state that gave Trump his largest percentage in 2020, and I've seen no poll on the electoral integrity questions of Wyoming voters. So he's saying, here's the limits to this experiment, right? But if pro-democracy conservatives are given the chance to support a candidate with whom they agree ideologically, and if Democrats and their independents in a state are able to cast their ballots solely on their assessment of Trump's response to the election, regardless of their views on every other policy question, their outcome will be a better indicator of public opinion than any Republican primary or partisan general election. And given the national interest this will generate, both sides will have more than enough money and media coverage to make their cases. I do not insist this is a win-win for the pro-Democratic side. It is, at worst, a win-tie. If Trump surrogate wins, we're no worse off than we are now. The opposite result will accomplish two things of great value. It'll affirm a strong support for our basic constitutional principles, and it might infect some other politicians with a dose of courage, as Cheney has shown. Very fascinating argument from Barney Frank. And real quick, breaking from Georgia, Fulton County, the district attorney, Fani Willis, who is investigating Trump and Lindsey Graham for election interference, just told CNN in an interview today, she's not worried at all about Trump trying to delay her investigation. She also said that the fact Trump was president will not prevent a prosecution in this case. Previously, as we know, she has told reporters that she hopes to make a charging decision before the end of the year. She did say within 6 months, but then she sort of walked that back a little bit. Her special grand jury selection begins May 2nd. All right, everybody, we'll be right back with Dallas McLaughlin to discuss his new album. It's called Rough Draft, Stories to Drink To. And then after that, we'll have the good news. Stick around. We'll be right back.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey, everybody, it's AG, and today's episode of The Beans is brought to you by Allform. They craft high-quality, customizable furniture for your home, and it's wonderful and beautiful and amazing, and it gets here so fast. I love it. The premium furniture from Allform is tailored to your specifications, and it's shipped to your doorstep free of charge. And it's a fraction of the cost of getting a custom couch from anywhere else. You can design your own with Allform. You can pick your fabric, your leg finish, the configuration. You can, and by the way, the fabric is spill, stain, and scratch resistant, which is great for the pod pets. I chose a three-seater sofa in whiskey-colored leather with walnut legs and a chaise lounge because it's awesome and modern and wonderful. And I could never have a leather couch with cats until now because this has a forever warranty. I'll get there in a second. But it's stylish, it's comfy, it's stunning, and it's to my specs. There's fast shipping, quick delivery, easy assembly. It makes Allform the best. Starting small, you can add more seats later if you want. If you get a bigger house or your family grows, you can choose armchairs, love seats, and even eight-seat sectionals. Moreover, you have 100 days to decide if you want to keep it. If you don't like it, they will come and pick it up for free and give you a full refund, so there's no risk. And like I said, forever warranty. Literally forever. So to find your perfect sofa, check out allform.com/dailybeans. And Allform right now is offering 20% off all orders for our listeners. 20% off for amazing, beautiful, customized, high-quality home furnishings. That's amazing. And all you have to do is go to allform.com/dailybeans. Everybody, welcome back. Happy and honored to be joined today by my friend, who, by the way, coined the phrase, put some beans on it. Way back from one of the early episodes of Mueller, She Wrote, where you joined us a couple times, author and comedian Dallas McLaughlin. Hi, Dallas.
Oh, hello. Thank you. Hi. Do you still use those drops we made forever ago?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes. Because I remember I had you do it in a couple of different, you know,
yeah.
There was serious, put some beans on it. There, yeah. there was inquisitive, put some beans on it. There was all sorts of different iterations of it. But
I know every once in a while on Twitter, I'll just get a flurry of notifications, and it's from people who are realizing that I did put some beans on it, and it just makes me smile.
Well, because, you know, for people, I haven't told this story for anyone who's listening, who's new, who doesn't know where put some beans on it came from. I was looking for a phrase like watch this space or put a pin in it, mm-hmm. You know, or something to that effect to be like, I bet this is going to happen or keep your eye on this. And I couldn't come up with one that was worth anything. And I remembered you had a joke in your set as a stand-up comic, where you said all that's keeping you from being wildly famous was the lack of a catchphrase like a la, you know, get her done.
Yeah.
And so you came up with a couple. Mm-hmm. And one of them was put some beans on it. And I asked if I could have that. And you said, absolutely, you may have that. And that's where that came from.
Well, see, I said that. And then all of a sudden, next thing I know, They Might Be Giants is writing a song about it. And I'm like, now, wait a minute. Hold on. Can I have it back, please? It's funny that I did a sketch about trying to be famous with catchphrases and then someone else took it and got famous. Such is life.
Such is life. I owe you everything, Dallas.
No. I love that. I catch the Daily Beans. I'll be honest. I listen in a couple times a month. I have a long commute sometimes, but like most of us, I get to work from home, so that's nice. But it brings me such joy that there's like this very serious community out there. Not very serious. I mean, obviously, you guys make you guys do your show, and there's a lot of light and fun and jokes involved in the horribleness. But like, there's this wonderful news community that embraces that catchphrase in any kind of a serious tone. It like makes my heart flutter. Like, it's so funny, and also at the same time wonderful. So thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, it was my 5-word speech when I accepted the Webby. For Best News of Politics podcast, they were like, what's your, I'm up there with like, you know, Issa Rae and Michael Douglas, Sheen, Martin Sheen. And we're all doing our 5-word speeches. And I'm like, let's put some beans on it. That's what it has to be.
Damn. That's just so great. I hope Martin Sheen, someday we need to get Martin Sheen to say it.
Yeah, well, we will. Actually, that's my next thing, is to just get a bunch of celebrities to say it.
Yeah.
The reason I wanted to talk to you today is because you have a new album coming out. You and I have been working together in comedy and in storytelling locally
and in music before that.
Yeah, in music for decades here. I think I met you in like 2002 or 2001 or something like that.
That is a safe bet. Yeah.
And we've been doing this thing with a group here called So Say We All. If you have a minute and a dollar to give to them, you should check them out. I work with them with the veterans writing group that they put together. We get published a lot. But the best part is we get to go to venues and colleges, UCSD and Whistle Stop and stuff like that, and tell our stories. It's kind of like The Moth, but, you know, local here, and it's pretty amazing. They picked it up on NPR for a while. And your stories are so brilliant and poignant and serious, but also funny, which is why I am drawn to them, because I deliver very serious, poignant, important historical news, but with humor, because I think that that's an important way to digest it.
Yeah.
And that's how you get your point across. And now you have out now, just recently released one of three, volume one.
Yeah.
An album of stories. And just tell me what it's called. Stories to.
Yeah. Yes. Rough Drafts. Stories to Drink To. Jury's out on if I'll call all the volumes Rough Drafts. I have no idea. It could happen. But yeah, Rough Drafts. Stories to Drink To. It's on Apple Music as of a couple days ago. And it's been on Bandcamp. I put it up on Bandcamp. So if you use Bandcamp. And I'll be honest, I am 41 years old. Somebody had talked about Bandcamp to me, and I think I fell asleep while they were talking. I don't know how it works, but it works. And you can pay what you want. So like Bandcamp's cool because the artist gets a lot more money. And then Apple Music obviously is cool because it reaches just a ton more people and it's so much more accessible. So anyway, you get it, it's fine. Listen, I'm not going to be a millionaire with this thing. What I want to do is just... Like you said, this group, So Say We All, I've been a professional writer for as long as I can remember in one way or another, script form or comedy or whatever. And I've been very, very fortunate to have that as my career. But these guys, So Say We All, they do this very specific thing with stories, and they really, really change my writing for the better. And I've been working with them for about a decade. And they do these monthly story shows at Whistle Stop, and I've been doing so many of them. And I was like, man, I love these things. Like they're my favorite thing that I do. Mm-hmm. Like, and people who go see the story nights, one, they love the story night in general. And two, like, they're just like, why aren't you just doing that? Like, why don't you just go do that? And I'm like, cause I don't know if you can. So this is kind of like my first step in seeing if maybe this is a possibility, just letting people know that stories exist. So that was kind of the point of putting this album out. And like you said, there's some sadness in the stories. There's some laughter. There's a lot of, you and I think both really enjoy the dark side of humor. And there's a lot of that throughout it. One of the stories is about my grandpa dying and having to deliver his eulogy and my mom deciding that I should do that because I'm a comic. So going through that debacle, and then there's also stories about, you know, Junior Seau, who tragically died. There's stories about gambling addiction. This first album has 5 stories in it, and one of them was actually really fun. We used to play trivia together. I used to host a trivia night that you would play.
Team Awesome.
I don't know if, yeah, Team Awesome, one of the winningest teams in the history of the trivia night.
Yeah. We got to take home Popocata Syphilis on many occasions, which by the name was the name of our trophy, quote unquote. If you won that night, we could talk about that another time.
Yeah, it's still up, by the way. I went to Blarney Stone a couple weeks ago. Still up. Well, I used to do a thing on trivia night every once in a while where one of the rounds was just called Hypothetical History, and it was where I wrote a question like, what happens if JFK doesn't get assassinated? And then I had the teams write an answer, and I gave points based on if I liked the answer or not. But I had a whole package of these questions, and some of them were very long and very fun. So there's one story I did where I just read the questions to the audience, and they're very stupid and silly, but great. So there's just a lot packed into these stories. But for me, you know, Mike Birbiglia, I think, took storytelling to the next level for a lot of people, kind of blending stand-up and storytelling. What I do is a little bit more storytelling. I like to say it's like Spalding Gray meets Mike Birbiglia. So a little darker, a little more structured, but at the same time, lots of jokes, lots of humor, a spoonful of sugar makes everything go down a lot easier. So that's kind of what this is. And I'm just excited to like get it out. All the feedback I've gotten so far has been like honestly very incredible and so encouraging. So I just want people to hear something that's a little new, a little different, maybe not what they're used to, but also extremely fun and very, very cool to listen to on a car ride, I would imagine.
Yeah, or whenever, when it, you know, at home.
Or at home, sitting there staring at a wall, drinking whiskey. That's probably the best.
Probably the best time, yeah. And on vinyl only. No, are you releasing it on vinyl? No.
You know, I wanted to, and then the people I was talking to people, and they're like, "Don't. Yeah. You won't get it for a year."
Yeah, and it's like nine. It's way more expensive than you can sell it for.
Isn't that crazy? Remember when we were doing music, and like we were like, "Oh, we want to do vinyl," like. And people would be like, yeah, it's like costs like 10 cents and, you know, no one's going to buy it. And now like you can't get like, I just don't understand.
Yeah, it's like $6.
Works sometimes.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. Me neither. But you have a very long career of writing and doing this exact kind of storytelling and then other things too. And then even for kids. I mean, you worked on Yo Gabba Gabba and Aquabat Super Show. And then, of course, I think when I met you, you were in a band called Bad Credit, which was seriously one of the most fun times you could have on a Friday night in a strip mall at an Irish pub.
Yeah.
And,
I don't disagree. Yeah.
One of the songs was called Bill Gates Owes Me $5, which was, you know, just, you've been tackling the wealth gap in this country for a long time is what I'm saying. And I want to ask you, this is out on Apple Music.
Uh-huh.
And you have not put this on Spotify. And I wanted to ask you really briefly before we get out of here today, because, listeners know I have just pulled all my content, or I've started the process to pull all my content off Spotify because of the, you know, the flagship show and the sexism, misogyny, racism, casual sexual assault jokes, and of course, the COVID disinformation. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on why you decided to go straight to Apple Music and Bandcamp with this.
Well, here's the thing. And to your point, because I see a lot of stuff on Twitter as well, like pulling music from a platform, not easy. Pulling anything from a platform is not easy. I've been experiencing this myself. We launched this album and initially kind of had it everywhere. And then we made some decisions to change that. And then I got feedback that a lot of these streaming services now are over scrutinizing everything because of the whole, I don't know if you want me to say his name, Joe Rogan debacle. You can bleep it. bleep debacle. The whole thing that's going on with him. And so it was, so even putting out anything right now that's not music has been a pain in the butt. And now to go in, like what I've been doing is going like, I don't need, first of all, you don't need Spotify. Just a little peel back the curtain real quick from an artist point of view, you know, Spotify is horrible for artists. The reason why Joe Rogan and some other places, they push them so much and they get so much up because they invested a ton of money. Like all the money they should be giving to me and you, they took that money and were like, hey, you know what? We'll give it to him and these other things that they paid millions and millions of dollars for. So like Spotify in general is just a terrible platform for artists. You don't make any money. I had an album up for a year and I did really, really nice numbers for a completely independent album. And I made like $120 in a year from Spotify, which is just asinine. So in general, I'm fine with saying, you know what? It's about time, you know, we all stood together and said, screw Spotify. And I'll be honest, you know, Apple Podcast, as far as revenue sharing, or Apple Music and stuff, as far as revenue sharing, not much better. It's a little bit better, but they also take care of their artists a little bit better and care. I mean, I don't know if you remember earlier last year, Spotify was just taking comedians off the platform. Like they were just literally taking stand-up albums off the platform and they had literal no reason to do it. They just decided to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I went back to look for some of my favorite Patton Oswalt records. They weren't there anymore.
They're just gone. Yeah. So it's, they're a weird company. They're trying to clean up this humongous mess. And I posted a thing a couple days ago, just because of all of this that's been happening with my album, getting it out there and deciding where it goes and what platform it sits on. You know, I got a lot of questions about Rogan and censorship, how, you know, they're censoring and it's not censorship. Like, let's just be honest with ourselves. Spotify is a business. If Spotify goes in and says, hey, we don't want you using the N word, we're going to take that off the, that's a business decision. That's not censorship. And if you feel like you could use those racial slurs, like it's okay, then that's a whole conversation you need to have with yourself and maybe like look around in the world and just take a temperature of what's happening specifically. But
it's hard to read the room in a podcast studio, but yeah, read the room.
Yeah. And listen, you could, we've all said terrible things throughout. I mean, like, this is why I used to do a bit in stand-up where I'm like, I would hate to be 21 now with the platforms that are available, like where I could just, when I was 21, I remember I there was no social media and I declared that beer sucked and it was all about white Russians. White Russians were a man's drink and beer was not. And, I said that when I was 21 to all my friends who to this day still make fun of me for saying that. Now, just imagine if I loudly declared that across all social media platforms. You know, like we live in a world where we can say the stupidest stuff out loud to the entire world. And it's our job now with that power to be a little bit more responsible with it. And so Joe Rogan's getting his due. And I don't know what the end result of that is, but for some of us, the end result is making a financial decision of our own and saying, I'll forgo the money I was getting on Spotify or the exposure I was getting on Spotify, and I'll place that energy elsewhere, like Bandcamp for some of us, or, you know, you have this wonderful rabid following. And so I saw when you made your decision, you had so much support from people who became patrons and all that other stuff. And that's fantastic. So it's making that decision for yourself and it's taking the financial hit for something you believe in. For some of us, that financial hit is a lot bigger than others. But, you know, I won't be able to buy a Happy Meal later because my Spotify month won't have come in. But yeah, so that's kind of the decision behind it, is like, they weren't great to start with. And then you start to peel back the curtain and you're like, God, they get worse with every layer you uncover. So it's like, why am I supporting that? Why am I involved in that? It's just bad to begin with.
Yeah. And it's not censorship. It's a business decision.
It's a business decision.
If Rogan is still there, you want to listen to him, go ahead. I'm not stopping you.
When you have to go through, Gil, and delete 70 plus episodes where he used or just casually used a racial slur, like, that's not great.
No.
That's not great.
No.
And I know that we have mutual friends that have been on his podcast that, you know, are minorities or marginalized groups. And that's the thing about, I'll just say this, the best thing about Rogan in general to me, do I think he's racist? No. Do I think he believes most of the stuff he talks about on his podcast? No, not even close. I maintain that he's vax. Somebody sent me a video last night of him on his podcast during the pandemic talking about how people should believe in vaccines. Mm-hmm. So like, he's just saying what he's saying because he knows that that will generate clicks, download streams. He, you know, he's a showman. He knows what he's doing on that platform, and it's all bullshit. Yeah. And that's what's frustrating to me,
especially when it's damaging to
exactly
to groups and communities or women, LGBTQ.
We're big, you know, in our COVID family. We are huge supporters of the trans community and LGBTQ community. We worked in theater our entire lives, so like that's a huge part of our community. And who's around us and how we raise our daughters. And so for me, it's like, I'm just not going to, that's where it gets scary. Is it's like, you can say what you want, you can be the showman and be ridiculous, but when it starts to hurt other people, like, even if you go and think, like you said, you're in a podcast studio. We're in our studios. We don't think about what that does when we say it out into the world, but it's hurtful and it does things and it hurts other people. And that's what sucks. And so that's why there's an outroar. And like that's why people are quote unquote canceling him, which isn't a real thing. But they're trying to do their best.
I don't like mustard. So have I canceled mustard because I don't eat it? Like, what?
Yeah, people are like, oh, we canceled Louis C.K. and Shane Gillis. Really? Because they just did a sold out tour across America. So yeah. I'm sure they're real canceled. But instead of faking something like cancel culture is real, you're doing what you're doing. I'm doing what I'm doing, which is making a decision to take our business elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the way to go instead of trying to ban Joe Rogan. Because all that does is rile up the base and give him more of a voice. So let's just do the opposite. Let's take away his voice by taking everything that we do and support elsewhere.
Yeah. So everybody take your business over to Apple Music and
get my album.
Look up Rough Drafts, Stories to Drink To by Dallas McLaughlin. Put some beans on it.
Put some beans on it.
We're going to revive that catchphrase.
Are we going to talk about Dan Quayle? I had so many thoughts about Dan Quayle.
We can, yeah, but before we get out of here, yeah, sure, we can do that because
I just wanted to say this though. About there. Please go buy my album. I appreciate you having me on, FYI. And when I ran for Waterboard up here, let me just reiterate, you had me on to talk about that. Your listeners were amazing. We had so many people donate specifically because I was on your podcast, which is amazing. So I will always love your audience just for that, but also because they're probably all very lovely people. Probably. There's one or two I've seen that I could do without. But I go get my album, Stories to Drink To. Dan Quayle, I just think it's funny. This is all I think is funny, is that when Mike Pence was doing the when the whole January 6th thing was happening, and Mike Pence called Dan Quayle to see if it was something he could do, see if he could overturn the election. Now, when you think of competent vice presidents that you could pick up a phone and call, how does Dan Quayle get to the top of that list? Like, I'm so confused.
You got to narrow it down. Competent politicians who are also from your home state that you have in your call list.
I mean, that's so narrow.
Yeah, for Pence, yeah.
Do you think Mike Pence has Dan Quayle on speed dial?
Oh yeah, I think they're really good. They're really good buddies. Yeah.
That is just so funny. Those two, I just want to go to like a Buffalo Wild Wings with Pence and Quayle and just be as they stare at each other and don't say anything. Like that has to be the most awkward time. That's so funny.
Do you think I can order the lemon pepper wings? I mean, I'm under a lot of pressure here.
I don't know. If mother might not allow us to eat hot wings. Why didn't he call it? Like that's like Cheney. Wouldn't Cheney be your first call for something like that?
I honestly would probably go to the Department of Justice or the FBI or, you know, something like that.
Anybody but Dan Quayle.
Yeah.
It's so funny to me. So
yeah,
weird.
I know.
Anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
It shocked us all.
And if you're Dan Quayle, are you getting that phone call? It's just like, I don't know.
No, he's like, no, dude, you can't fucking do that. And that's why when I say to people who are like, he could have totally done it. I'm like, dude, Dan Quayle is smarter than you. Just sit with that for a minute.
Did he like when he got the number and saw maybe the White House line, was he confused? Like, why is somebody from the White House calling me? Like, that is just such a weird decision. And yeah, like,
I wonder what his ringtone for Pence is.
It's probably like, how deep is your love?
How deep is your love?
Oh, I don't want to get sued.
I'm all out of love. I'm so lost without you. Yeah, it's definitely air supply.
It's definitely air supply for sure. Oh, man. Anyway, thank you for letting me rant about.
Yeah, of course.
Dan Quayle.
No problem. No problem at all. It's been great having you. It's been great talking to you. Everybody, again, it's called Rough Drafts, Stories to Drink To. It's available on Apple Music. Dallas McLaughlin, I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Everybody, stick around. We'll be back with the good news.
Hello, I'm Jeff Stein.
And I'm Jean Meserve. Together, we host the Spy Talk podcast.
Every week, we delve into the worlds of intelligence, foreign policy, military operations, and the intersection of all three in national security issues.
Spycraft, cybersecurity, violent extremism, whether at home or abroad, technology's impact on intelligence gathering. We cover it all and much more.
We interview former spooks, military officers, government officials, journalists, and national security researchers, leveraging our backgrounds in military intelligence and homeland security, along with our decades of experience as journalists and news organizations like Newsweek, The Washington Post, and CNN.
So join us every Thursday for a new episode of Spy Talk, available wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's time for the good news.
Well, we'll float on good news. It's on the way.
And joining me today for the good news is y'all, because Dana's out and you just send me your good news. I'm going to read it. We're going to laugh. It's going to be awesome. Or awe, or, you know, I mean, there's the range of reactions is so vast and varied with this amazing group. So if you have any good news, confessions, corrections, what the mutt, find the cat, whoopee stories, anything you want to send to us, photos, pod pet pics, that's hard to say, or anything you're creating or making and you want to share your business with us, we want to know. You can do it at dailybeanspod.com and click on contact. First up is from Mary, pronouns she and her. My good news for the week is that my friend is moving to my city later this month. She and I were friends in college. Oh, that's so cool. We went our separate ways after graduation, but we've kept in touch over the years. I'm really looking forward to hanging out with her again. On a side note, I'll be rooting for the Cincinnati Bengals in the Super Bowl this year. I have no connection to Cincinnati. I grew up in New Jersey, but I now live in Massachusetts. But my spouse grew up in California, so he'll be rooting for the Rams. So she doesn't say why. I think it's because her spouse is rooting for the other team. But it could also be that they're the underdog. You know, who knows? Mary, best of luck. I'm also rooting for the Bengals. Don't tell Dana. Next up from D, pronouns she and her. I've been enjoying the sharing of whoobies. So here's my contribution. I do not have any whoobies of my own since my mom was the type that threw everything out that we left behind when we went away for college, a subject for my therapist. Because of this, I had vowed not to do any of that to my kids. Each has a stack of tubs in the basement that they slowly, maybe too slowly, go through when they come for a visit. So here's my daughter's whoobie. This is Elmo, and it was given to her by my mom and dad when she was born. She's now 30. And was on her bed until she left for college in 2009. She wanted to take him, but ended up taking a stuffed dog she thought was more grown up. So Elmo's been in the basement, sitting in one of her tubs for about 13 years. Oddly, he's never in the trash or giveaway pile. I also have a fetching cat. She chases paper balls all over the house. If she hears, oh, so like Trump stuff. That Trump crumples up stuff, throws it, cat plays. He doesn't have pets. Animals hate him. Anyway. If she hears someone balling up a piece of paper to throw it away, she's suddenly there no matter where she was in the house. We moved a sofa a few years ago and found about 10 paper balls under the piece of furniture. Let's not talk about my house cleaning skills, haha. Below is a photo of Elmo, the fetching cat who often pops up from behind my computer when I'm working, and one of the quilts I designed is a quilt pattern designer. I write and sell the patterns. Thanks for all the fun you bring to my mornings on the treadmill, sweet. If any of the listeners are quilters, my website is snugglesquilts.com. Look at this Elmo. I wonder if it's a puppet. Can you put your hand in there and make his mouth murmur? Look at the kitty. My blue eyes. So cute. And oh, what a beautiful quilt. Oh my goodness. That's lovely. All right. So D, you write and sell patterns. That's so cool. Snugglesquilts.com. Everybody, check that out. And thank you for that submission. That's wonderful. Next up from Dean, pronouns he and him. Oh, this doggy. Oh, look at the eyes. Okay. My lovely wife, Katie, is a professional musician. And like a lot of musicians, she has to figure out how to make the best of the pandemic situation with the loss of live gigs. So she and her band, The Incubators, decided to double down on studio time last year and put out an EP called Apollo. With a complete shit show that was the former guy and his goons, she decided to take a big risk and wrote and published a very political song called Numb Enough that I have been wanting to share with you and possibly serve as a reminder to us of how bad things were and how we can't afford to become numb to the noise. Links will be in the show description, everyone. So now that I finally shared this about my wife, I wanted to also share a recent development. Our kids started asking us to play The Beans on their ride to school. It's because they might be giants, does the music, honestly. The music is so amazing. I think it's the swearing, actually, says Dean. I think it's the swearing that draws them in. But whatever it takes, right? I bet it's the music. Ask them. See what it is. Finally, for Pod Pet Tax, our fur babies, Jax, our 4-year-old American bully mix with the one blue eye, and Emmylou, our 6-month-old boxer pup. Oh, they keep us laughing and focused on what matters most. I'm interested, too, Dean, if you got the dog for the other dog to keep them kind of occupied. I was thinking about that when I had a dog. I was like, this dog needs another dog. Oh, this boxer pup is huge. Okay, this is a big dog. So cute. And the 2-colored eye. These are beautiful puppies. Thank you for sharing that. And everybody check out the link to the song. You definitely want to hear it. Next up from Tim, pronouns he and him. Thanks for the call out to creators. I dwell in a world of graphic novels and animation, and there's a megaton of content on my websites. The hub for everything is my archival site. It says Tim Eldred, TimElDred.com, where you can see stuff going all the way back to when I was 12 in the 70s. From there, you can find 2 extended free webcomics, a sci-fi comedy named Grease Monkey, and a multimedia sci-fi mystery named Pittsburgh. Your podcast keeps me company while I work on these things. So it's like you've helped them make them happen. Thank you. That's incredible. Look at this. The many works of Tim Eldred. Something cool behind every button. Oh, this is so great. I have to check this out. All right. So timeldred.com, everybody. And next up, Cassie, pronouns she and her. Hello, Beans Queens. I submitted good news last year that I had started my small soap business in the middle of the pandemic. Well, a year later, I can happily report things are going extremely well. I am growing at a quick but still manageable for stay-at-home mom of 2 toddlers pace. And I'm getting to flex my creative muscles big time. All my fragrances are inspired by women in history. And this month, for spring, I'm releasing a lilac scent. I love lilacs. Inspired by Susan B. Anthony. Florals for spring, groundbreaking. I know what that's from, Cassie. That's Devil Wears Prada. But I realized that her mission for securing the vote for women fell woefully short and didn't include people of color. So I'm going to be donating the net proceeds from all sales of that fragrance to Stacey Abrams' Fair Fight to help ensure voting rights for everyone. I'm also making a special edition of my wet skin moisturizer called Notorious, inspired by RBG. I'm attaching some photos of my work that I'm especially proud of. Thank you for all your hard work. I know for a fact I wouldn't be able to both keep up on the news and, oh wait, it just says to keep up on the news if it weren't for you. Thank you so much, Cassie. And by the way, that's incredible. Florals for spring, groundbreaking. Anyone who doesn't, an incubus for the viral plague. Okay, now I have to go watch The Devil Wears Prada. Although I have a lot of problems with that film. I might put a Twitter thread out about it. There's a lot of problems in that movie. Not like inconsistencies or anything, just the characters are all dicks. All right. Oh, Dun Dun. Love it. Look at these soaps. These are so beautiful. So, so great. Did you say where we can find these? You need to let us know, Cassie, so we can shout that out. All right. Unless you don't want like a million people buying soaps because, you know, we got the 2 Todds at home. Next up from Allie, pronouns she and her. Hi, Beans Queens. Longtime listener here since the kitchen days. First time submitter. I always think of the things I want to submit when I'm working, in the car, or otherwise busy, and then I forget. But my sweet rescue pup, Taco, is just too good of a what the mutt not to share. The pic is of him and his BFFs at doggy daycare. He's the white fluffy guy in the back with the amazing smile. The other guys have some pretty amazing smiles of their own, too. I was searching Pet Finder for a golden mix when I came across him. He was 14 weeks old and looked more like a baby seal than a puppy. As luck would have it, he was with a rescue we had previously adopted and fostered through, so they were able to fast track a meet and greet. We knew right away he was our dog. He has turned out to be the most wonderful dog. He's as sweet as he is beautiful and loves everyone he comes across. I've even seen him trying to play with frogs and bugs. He's soft as a bunny and he purrs like a kitten. We thought he was a golden lab mix, maybe. Golden or lab mix, but we're really curious what else he had in him. So we did a DNA testing. If you could come even close to guessing what he is, you'll be the first. Although he does look like a fancy English cream miniature golden retriever, he is in fact, drumroll, a Chihuahua mix. He's quite a few other things too, mostly Chihuahua, but he's also, and you know what? I think my producers didn't put this at the end. But I'm just going to read this. First of all, this dog is adorable. And they all do have really nice smiles. But this dog is a Bolognese, Shih Tzu, Whippet, Jack Russell, and some others. We call him a Chibolo Shih Tzu Whippet Jack. If everyone could see how wonderful this boy is, it would be the hottest dog designer breed around. Things have been pretty boring for Taco during the pandemic. We've been doing less of the dog park and doggy daycare to be on the safe side, although we're all fully vaxxed and boosted. I'm just not up to a lot of close interactions yet, but sweet Taco is way too playful and social to spend this time with a middle-aged woman drinking coffee and watching Rachel Maddow. He really needs a playmate who's not a bug. So we're looking for a second dog to add to the family. Oh, I was just talking about that with the other ones. My son, who is the best dog Bubba ever, is lobbying me like Charles Koch and Kyrsten Sinema. So just like her selling her soul, there's no chance it's not going to happen. Hopefully, it will be just like it was with Taco. And we'll know when we see him. Wish us luck. Yes, good luck, Allie. And I'm going to ask my producers about why they're not putting the answers at the end so that we can't see them. We'll find out. Everyone, thank you so much for these submissions. Again, if you've got Whoopi stories, pod pets, what the mutt, whatever you want to do, confessions, corrections, anything I got wrong. If you have any insight on what I was talking about with the 18 U.S. Code 2071 and whether or not that statute can bar someone from running for office despite what the Constitution says about requirements, I think the answer is yes, but we don't know. It's untested. If I were an attorney trying to get somebody who was convicted of that to be able to run for office, I would use the argument that the Constitution clearly lays out the requirements for running for president. And so this statute can't supersede that, right? I don't know. That'd be my argument. We'll see. Anyhow, send everything to me. You can send everything to me, all of your input, by going to dailybeanspod.com and clicking on contact. And I think I'm going to see if I can get Amy to read good news with me tomorrow, or maybe I'll find somebody. And if not, it'll be me, and that'll be cool too. I'm enough. I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. And gosh darn it, people like me. And everybody, until tomorrow, please take care of yourselves, take care of each other, take care of the planet, and take care of your mental health. I've been AG, and them's the Beans. The Daily Beans is written and executive produced by Allison Gill, with additional research and reporting by Dana Goldberg and Amy Carrero. Sound design and editing is by Desiree McFarlane, with art and web design by Joel Reeder with Moxie Design Studios. Music for The Daily Beans is written and performed by They Might Be Giants, and the show is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, please visit mswmedia.com.